Welcome to selfdiscoveryradio.com, where the orchard of wisdom is just ready for picking. We celebrate your why, the journey that you've taken that inspires someone else. We support your services, we support your story. Come and be our guest, become a host, be an author with us, come see what we've got. Our next show is...
Good day, everybody, and welcome to Recovering the Whole You. I am Dr. Kitty Adley, physical therapist and recovery expert. It is my pleasure to have with me today, celebrating Cervical Awareness Month, Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, right? Dr. Inga Pratt. So Dr. Pratt, welcome. Could you please tell us a little bit about you and what you do, who you are, what do you love?
Hi, Kitty. Pleasure to be here. I'm wearing teal. Teal is the color for Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. So I live in Nassau, Bahamas. I am an obstetrician gynecologist, and one of my areas of interest is early detection and the prevention of cervical cancer. So this topic is very, very, very close to my heart. I am a consultant obstetrician gynecologist at the Doctors Hospital Medical Facility, and I also work at the Princess Margaret Hospital in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and I'm also the Clinical Director of Advanced Health Center, where we deal with women's health, so any aspect of women's health, and we focus on, of course, the physical, the medical, but we also focus a lot on spiritual health, holistic health as well.
Fantastic, fantastic. So this is why I really wanted you on, because I know your love for it, I know your passion for it, and your comprehensive approach towards health and wellness as a whole. And so as we talk about cervical cancer, let's talk about the cervix, because some people don't even know where it is really and what it does. So could you just tell us a little bit about the cervix before we delve into the cancer aspect of it, please?
Okay, so most people are familiar with the uterus or the womb. So mm-hmm. The cervix is actually the neck of the womb. Mm-hmm. And so essentially the uterus is made up of two parts, uterine corpus, which is the body of the cervix. That is what gets bigger with a fetus, or if someone has fibroids, it will enlarge it. Okay. And the other part is the uterine cervix, which essentially is what dilates when a woman is about to give a vaginal birth. So it's the dynamic part of the cervix, of the uterus, sorry. And essentially its function is to hold a developing fetus. That's the main function of it. And that's the area where we take the pap smear from the actual cervix part of the woman.
Okay, great. So what exactly is cancer of the cervix?
So cancer basically means that there are some abnormal cells mm-hmm. that have invaded other layers of the body. Mm-hmm. So when you can have abnormal cells, that's called dysplasia. But when those cells start to invade or become aggressive, that is considered to be cancerous tissue. And that cancer could stay in that area. So it could stay in the area of the cervix or uterus, or it could spread to distant part of the body. That's called metastases, when it spreads to the liver, the brain, and other areas. Okay. There are two particular types of cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. There's the squamous type, which is the most common, and which comes from the squamous cells of the cervix. And then we also have glandular cells of the cervix, because most women will notice that the vaginal area will be very moist. Some of those secretions come from the cervical glands. And that type of cancer is called adenocarcinoma, but it's much less common than squamous or carcinoma.
Okay. So when are we more likely, because what ages are we more likely to see these changes in our cervix, these cancerous or what you say, abnormal changes of cells in our lifespan as women? What age?
So the cervix is very dynamic. There's an area the cervix called exactly the transformation zone. So the transformation zone is always turning over cells, constant. It's always going through constant change. And that is where we have our interest, because if anything is going to happen, more than likely it will start in that particular area.
So okay. Could you just...
It's different depending on where we are, like pre-adolescence,
Could you just repeat that sentence for us, please?
So the transformation zone is the area where cells turn over, and if anything abnormal will happen, most of the time it starts in the transformation zone area.
Okay.
Because, you know, anytime there's change, then it gives certain abnormal cells the opportunity to replicate.
Okay.
So depending on where we are in our life, our cervix will look different. So if you're pre-adolescent, your cervix will look different from someone who's pregnant versus someone who's postmenopausal. So our cervix always looks different. But the majority of cervical cancers tend to occur in women over 40, between ages of 40 and 65, that has the highest incidence of cervical cancer. But there have been women who've been diagnosed as early as 25, 22, but that is extremely rare, extremely rare.
And what do you think contributes to those early manifestations, or what is likely to cause these cancers to manifest in one population or one person versus another person?
So the bad boy, the villain in this story, is the HPV, the human papilloma virus. It's becoming as well known now as many of the other viruses. And HPV is something called an oncovirus, meaning onco, as you know, means cancer.
Right.
So it's a type of virus that if you get it, you could develop cancer. So most people who are sexually active, because it's gained through sexual contact, will develop the human papilloma virus. But it's our body's nature. If we're strong, if we're immune competent, then we clear the virus. We only have issues when the virus persists. So the things that put us at risk for cervical cancer include the HPV virus, specifically the high-risk type, of which there are many, 16 and 18 being the most prevalent ones. I call them the teenagers. That's how I remember them. Yeah, because they're more prevalent. Also things that don't make our immune system as strong. So things like smoking, things like diabetes, things like human immunodeficiency virus as well. So those conditions could predispose us or increase our risk. Also, we are prone to sexually transmitted infections that also weakens our immune system and make us more at risk as well.
Okay. So, you know, just listening to you now, it really drives home the point that when we talk to our patients and we do our public education, when we stress, you must live a healthy lifestyle, eat healthy, rest, exercise, try and keep this body at its peak, because viruses like HPV and other ones are just sitting there waiting for any drop in our wellness and our immunity, like you said, to sneak in and wreak havoc in our bodies. So we really have to strive and move towards that healthy lifestyle. So, all right, so you've contracted HPV, or you have these dysplasias going on. What signs and symptoms can a woman look for to give an indication that, one, something may not be right, or we may be developing, or we do have cervical cancer?
So cervical cancer, there are abnormal cells that present before cervical cancer. So really, for the majority of persons, they would be asymptomatic. So we have these changes going on, and you really can't tell. That's why it's very, very important to do a pap smear, because with the annual or twice yearly pap, you are able to pick up those abnormal cells and treat them. But if you develop cervical cancer, some symptoms that you may present with would be abnormal bleeding, heavy bleeding, bleeding after intercourse, especially bleeding in between periods. So you just have some spotting. A few times patients may present with some abnormal vaginal discharge and odor as well. And they may sometimes present with pain. But usually at that point, you have developed cervical cancer itself. So it's important that, you know, you do your screening to prevent cervical cancer, because it's entirely preventable. The incidence of cervical cancer has dropped drastically worldwide because of increased screening. So screening is the way to go, for sure.
Okay, great. So with screening, we're talking about the pap smear. So how soon or when do you recommend a woman start getting pap smears?
Okay, so there are different recommendations on when you should get your pap smear. But you almost universally accepted is you start your pap smears at age 21, mm-hmm. and you can end them at age 65 if your last three pap smears have been normal.
Okay.
And locally, we recommend getting the pap smear annually, meaning you come in, when you do your physical, we do the pap smear at that time. In other countries, because they have different screening and prevention programs, they advocate for every 2 years or every 3 years. But locally, we advocate for annual pap smear because we have a higher incidence of cervical cancer in our population. So we stick to annual screening from age 21 to 65.
Okay, but you it was recognized one of the risks is early sexual activity and multiple sexual partners. So if a young woman starts to have sex before the age of 21, is it recommended that she comes in and gets this pap smear as well?
No. So the main thing that we do is we still stick to age 21 because okay. we don't want to overscreen or we don't want to intervene because we will see abnormalities.
Okay.
And that will require intervention, which would have a long-term impact. So at age 21, we should be able to detect any abnormality and treat it because cervical cancer is not the type of cancer that develops over a year or two.
Okay.
If they're abnormal or plastic cells, usually you have a window of about 5 to 7 years mm-hmm. in which you can detect and treat that disease.
Okay.
So definitely, as a rule, I do not screen under 21, and in general, most programs recommend age 21 and older.
Okay.
Despite whatever previous sexual activity you would have. Now, if a woman is symptomatic, then we would investigate, but that's not screening, that's diagnostic.
Diagnostic, okay, great. So besides the pap smear, are there any screening tools? Actually, I think we jumped the gun. I think we probably need to explain what a pap smear is because some people listening may not know what a pap smear is. So just for the benefit of those who are not familiar with what a pap smear is and the reason why we do it and what it's going after, could you just expand on that a little bit, please?
Sure. The pap smear is my favorite thing in the whole wide world. I hate it. Personally, I'm always a little bit, you know, cautious when I'm having mine done.
Uh-huh.
And I did mine in January of this year, but I love to do it because it's such a great thing. So essentially, what the pap smear does is it takes vaginal cells,
uh-huh.
and look at it in the laboratory. So there are different types of pap smears. So one is called the conventional slide-based. So essentially, when a woman comes for an annual exam, we check her from head to toe, and then we put in something called a speculum, which is a device that allows us to see the vulva, the vagina, and the cervix. So I look at all those areas, and then I look at the cervix and make sure everything looks normal. And then we take a spatula, which is just basically a flat instrument, and a small brush called a cider brush. And we take samples from the outside and the inside of the cervix. The whole pap procedure takes probably less than a minute. I think it's just, you know, the psychological thoughts about, oh, I have to do the pap smear. But really the actual pap smear takes less than a minute, okay? And then I take the specimen and I put it on a slide, spray some fixative on it, and send it to the lab. For the other type of pap smear, it's called the liquid-based pap. So this pap is good because if there's any abnormality in your pap smear, on that same sample, you can do additional testing. So the woman would not have to come back and repeat the procedure. So the liquid-based pap is definitely probably becoming the standard of care because
okay.
on that same sample, you can do high-risk HPV. With the conventional slide, if there's an abnormality, I would have to bring the woman back in and do the high-risk HPV on the liquid pap sample.
Okay, great.
So those are the two main types. Yes.
Great, all right. And so any other additional screening tools that you use for cervical cancer?
Yes, so it depends on where you are. And so essentially when I take that sample, I don't read that sample. That sample goes to a cytology lab where a cytopathologist would read that sample. So if it's all about access, so in an area, a rural area where you don't have access to cytopathologist, then even if you take a pap smear, it will not be read. So another option is called VIA, which is short for visual inspection with acetic acid. So acetic acid is basically household vinegar, you know, and what is done is it's applied to the cervix, and I look to see if there are any white areas. So those white areas put me in that, okay, there's an abnormality in the cervix. So if I am screening, say, for instance, 100 women a week, we don't really have a cytopathologist, but I pick up 5 women who have those acetyl white changes, and I stress to them, or I stress to the government, okay, these 5 women need to go on to have their pap smear done or some sampling done. So that's called VIA. The other option is called high-risk HPV. So we discussed HPV. So we can sample the cervix for high-risk HPV. If it's negative, then you're considered to be at low risk for cervical cancer.
Okay.
Now, your screening, once you're beyond 30, can stretch out to as many as every 5 years. You wouldn't have to do an annual pap. You can do it every 5 years. So those are the alternate means of screening.
Okay. Thank you very much, because I think a lot of women are very apprehensive going in to get it done because it seems a bit invasive. And the fact that it's less than a minute, and I'm sure when you say spatula, you're not talking about the one in the kitchen. It's shrinked for the size to the size that it needs to go in. So So thank you for explaining that a little bit more. So we're talking about, this is Cancer Awareness Month, or Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. So once you've been diagnosed with cancer, with cervical cancer, what are your treatment options?
So as with any cancer, your treatment depends.
Your treatment becomes? So
depends on your stage, cancer is diagnosed. So essentially, there are 4 main stages of cervical cancer. So with stage 1, it's confined to the cervix. Stage 2, essentially, it's either confined to the cervix or upper vagina, or to the immediate side walls next to the cervix. Stage 3 is when you have more distant spread. So it's spreading to the lower third of the vagina, or it's causing swelling of the kidneys. So a lot of women, how they know they have cervical cancer is they present with swelling of their kidneys. And anytime you see swollen kidneys on the ultrasound scan, that clues us in, hey, let's check this woman's cervix. And then, of course, stage 4 would be spread to bladder, bowel, the liver, and all those other areas. So, obviously, the earlier we detect the cervical cancer, the better the treatment. So, with an early stage cancer, and it also depends on the woman's reproductive wish, because as I said, the age range could be as early as 40 years old. So if the woman is done with childbearing, then one of the things that we can offer her is a hysterectomy. A hysterectomy essentially is just a removal of the uterus, including the cervix. And there are different types of hysterectomy, depending on what type of cancer you have and the size of the tumor, et cetera, et cetera. So the way how we do it will change. And usually those patients are managed by the gynecologist and the radiation oncologist, as well as the heme oncologist as well. So those are, it's a multidisciplinary approach to management of the patient. So early stages, we treat with hysterectomy. Any stage usually that spreads beyond the cervix is treated with chemotherapy and radiation therapy. And there are different types of radiation therapy. There's internal radiation therapy, which is through the vagina, that's called brachytherapy. There's external beam radiation as well, where it's directed from outside the pelvis. And then there's chemotherapy and different chemotherapeutic regimens.
Okay, great. So this is where I usually see the patients after they've had the treatment intervention. And like you mentioned with the surgery, we're seeing them sometimes for scarring in the area, both internally and externally, depending on how it was approached. We see them for fatigue, and depending on the drugs, we may have some neuropathies in the area, as well as lymphedema, which can be caused from the radiation and the surgery. So one of my areas of specialty is oncology rehab. And so when we get patients that have been diagnosed, we try and same thing, early detection, and try and do early intervention so these late and long-term effects of cancer treatment do not prevent or decrease the function of the patient. But again, it's like you said, let's get in early detection, early intervention. Let's get you back to a full functioning life as soon as possible. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a lot of information that we've had, that we've shared so far. What else would you like to share with regards to cervical cancer?
So, in terms of prevention, because I think prevention is a whole lot better than cure.
Definitely.
A big thing in the preventative armoire would be the vaccine. So there are vaccines available that prevent high-risk HPV. Mm-hmm. So the target population are the adolescents. So before they're in initiation into sexual activity, we give them the vaccine so they don't pick up the vaccine. However, there's a strong movement for older women, even in our age group, who have not been previously vaccinated to get the vaccine. So there are several countries where the cervical cancer incidence has significantly dropped. So essentially, they have almost no cervical cancer because they started this vaccine many, many years ago. So in a country such as ours, where the vaccine is relatively new, I would just stress the buy-in in parents to ensure that their children get the vaccine, and in older women to definitely get the vaccine, especially if they've had an abnormal pap smear, because even though there are different types of high-risk HPV, so may have been exposed to one type, but there are a lot of different types of high-risk HPV. So I would stress definitely the vaccine. I would also stress to women to definitely do the appropriate screening and get your pap smears done. Have your cervix looked at. It's very, very important. As a matter of fact, at the Princess Margaret Hospital right now, our obstetrics and gynecology department, we're extending Cervical Cancer Awareness Month to the month of February because we understand the importance of the impact of cervical cancer on our country, because it impacts entire families, because you have relatively young women suffering from this illness. And, you know, a lot of times with cancer treatment, you have loss of income, you have loss of self-esteem, you have loss of functionality. So we're actually extending it to increase our awareness. And also, I would stress that women look for the signs. So any abnormal bleeding, please definitely, I would stress that they have it checked and not wait until it's unbearable or they can't live with it anymore. Because the earlier we detect any abnormality, the better your treatment options are. And the better chance that you have of cure.
Okay, great. I just want to go back and visit the vaccination aspect of it, because there are quite a few people in our community that are very uncomfortable with vaccinations, and particularly giving it to teenagers or young women, and the young men get vaccinated as well too, from what I'm understanding. Yeah? Okay. So to the parents that are uncomfortable with vaccinating their children for this, for various reasons, thinking it may be, give them a license to be a little bit more promiscuous, a little bit more exploratory. What advice would you give a parent that is uncomfortable with the idea of vaccines?
I think this particular vaccine is one of the greatest gifts that you can give your child. You know, we buy a lot of things, but I don't think we invest as much as we can into their future. And I think ultimately, by giving them this vaccine, it really reduces one of the risks in their life. Of course, it doesn't prevent other illnesses, but this particular one, your child will not have to suffer from. So I think that it's a great gift. And I think ultimately, children make their own choices. And what you do won't necessarily affect their choices. You understand? I don't think many of them will even understand why they were given the vaccine. So to say it's giving them a license to be promiscuous, I definitely do not agree with that. I have two girls. One is 7, one is 10, and the 10-year-old is going to get a vaccine because it's preventative. If I can prevent her from developing cervical cancer in the future from this oncovirus, I'm going to do it. And it has virtually no side effects.
Okay. So they've done the studies and the how long are the studies?
The studies have been over 30 years long. So this has been going on for a very, very long time. So we have, in certain populations, like I said, they eradicated cervical cancer. And then they also have herd immunity, because the original studies were on women,
uh-huh.
girls.
And okay.
Because the girls don't get it, they have something called herd immunity. So the entire community doesn't develop it because the girls don't have it. So it can be passed back and forth between the girls and the boys. And also another added benefit of the vaccine is it prevents vulval warts or warts, because there's a lowest type of HPV that causes warts. So this vaccine also covers the lowest type as well.
Okay. So
I highly recommend it.
Okay. And at what age would you recommend children be given the vaccine?
Sorry, please repeat.
At what age would you recommend children be given the vaccine?
So you can start from age 11.
Okay.
Appropriate time.
Okay.
But it can be given as early as age 9. But from 11, definitely.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for speaking to that, because vaccines are a very hot topic right now in a lot of the circles that I move in. And I think we need to discuss it more, both the pros and the cons in terms of views for it. And the more we can engage in these kinds of conversations and provide the evidence for it, I think it lends to a better, more educated conversation with that. So thanks for taking the time for that. I just want to go back to something that you said, though, because you talked about initially when you introduced yourself that you offer a holistic approach through your clinic, Advanced Medical Clinic. Did I say it right title? Advanced Health Center. And I really love that, because I truly believe in the holistic approach. And so as we talk about women that have had cervical cancer and have gone through the treatments that may have had a hysterectomy, there's been some manipulation of the body to try and remove these cancerous cells. We recognize, yes, they may have deficits or changes in their physical function, but emotionally, these women also have challenges with body image. If they've lost the ability to bear children, sometimes just relating to their sexual partners may now be a challenge. There's an emotional and maybe even a spiritual component attached to the cancer treatment and management. And I know a lot of times I do guided imagery. We have our patients write it out. They talk about it. What do you do in your clinic to help these women deal with this new phase in life?
So essentially, I like to talk about things. So sometimes most of my visit would be just speaking about what their concerns are, because a lot of times women cannot speak to their partners about how they're feeling, how their body image has been affected, uh-huh. and their overall function has been affected. So it tries as possible to flesh out what their concerns are and direct them to people who can help them in the different areas. So it just depends on where they are. So I can help them a lot with their sexual function, but persons who are experiencing depression or any other psychological side effects, I can refer them in the right direction. Persons who need physiotherapy, who need, just return to function, I can refer them to the physiotherapist. So it just depends on whatever their concerns are. But the main thing is just addressing them. Mm-hmm. And I also help them a lot with speaking to their partners about
how they're important.
Because at the end of the day, you know, they live with someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's
very important.
Your heart system understands how you feel and can help you in that recovery process, because your mental health is vital to your recovery. And I think patients who are better prepared or who are able to talk things out tend to do better. They tend to handle the chemotherapy, the radiation a lot better as well. Their recovery is better. And then I also stress the importance of vitamins as well and a healthy diet. So all those things go together in helping the recovery process.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's good that we put it out there, because there are a lot of women that are suffering silently, especially when it comes to sexual health, not realizing that we have healthcare professionals out there. Yes, your gynecologist is there, OBGYN is there to do the screening and the treatment and I don't want to say medication aspect of it, but you're explaining that you go far beyond that, right? And then also when we identify challenges or impairments, it could be sexual floor dysfunction, they may have challenges voiding, going to the bathroom, bowel and bladder. We have physical therapists like myself that have oncology training and all the pelvic floor specialists that can help with sexual activity, with incontinence issues if there are. And so we just want people to know, women to know, that there are resources out there for you as you're recovering. So don't suffer silently. If you don't tell us what's going on, we really don't know. And I really want to keep pushing that message out there so that you can live your best life. So we're wrapping up now. We're wrapping up. And I'm thinking of all these different topics I need to bring you back in: adolescent sexual health, sexually transmitted diseases. Uh-huh. So if I ding you again, I hope that you would give us another few minutes of your time. It's been my pleasure. So I just want to give you probably take whatever time you need just to tell us a little bit more what you can contribute to this conversation. And a little bit more about where we can find you physically, but also on the World Wide Web, if your email, your websites. And so people hearing this can actually contact you if they need more information.
Okay. So essentially, the early detection and prevention of cervical cancer is one of my passions. I believe that it is not something that women have to experience. So it's entirely 100,000% preventable. And to say that it's not a diagnosis of cervical cancer, for the majority, is they have not had a recent pap smear.
So I'm going to stick a pin 1 second. I'm going to ask you to repeat that so we could clip that out. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Diagnosis, you said it's 100%, 1,000%. Go ahead.
It's 100,000% avoidable. So it is a disease that you do not have to get. It will not pop upon you. It will not peep upon you. There are precancerous cells that clues in that, hey, something is going wrong. Let's treat. So we can prevent the disease. And overall, but just a pap smear, which is a few minutes. Granted, I will admit it is a little bit uncomfortable in that, you know, just the process of it. And unfortunately, we haven't found any alternatives, but it's a few minutes and it can save your life. And the recurrent theme in women who have been diagnosed is they have not had a reason pap smear. And every time I diagnosed cervical cancer, I cry. Had we made, we would not be here. And it's a very debilitating disease. It causes a lot of discomfort. It causes social discomfort because some women can't go out while the disease is forming, et cetera, et cetera. So I think because it has such a devastating effect on the individual and their families, their income, their finances, I think for something avoidable, we really should not put ourselves through that. So I worked a lot with women with gynecological malignancies, but I thought that my efforts would be more beneficial if they were more focused on early detection and prevention. So now I see the 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, and I preach to them. I get up on my pulpit and I say, listen to me, don't make decisions. Your 16-year-old body make decisions that your 40-year-old body has to live with.
Awesome.
You know, I can implement the interventions and I can educate them, you know, stressing the condom use, you know, because if they don't pick up the HPV, they will not develop cervical cancer. So I feel like my efforts are better and more supportive to the gynecologists and other professionals who deal with women who have cervical cancers if I focus more on the early detection and prevention. So I'm located in Nassau, Bahamas, Advanced Health Center. You can Google us. We're also on Facebook as well. And my email is ingapratmd@gmail.com. And we're located in the Shirley Street Plaza above Better Bodies Gym. That was intentional.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for trying to be at the beginning and the screening and the prevention of it. Thank you so much. I apologize if I sound congested. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, just wrapping at the combined sections meeting for the American Physical Therapy Association. We had our big conference, so the tropical bird did not deal well with the cold weather in and out on the coast, but it was a fantastic conference. I'm looking forward to sharing what I've learned, and I did do a pelvic floor course, so I can talk to you about that a little bit more as well. So again, this is Dr. Kitty Adley, physical therapist, recovery expert. I am at Handling Your Health, Wellness and Rehab in Nassau, Bahamas, but I'm Bahamas and Beyond, the Caribbean physio. You can find me. We'll post all the links below. And thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to us. And I really hope the nuggets that Dr. Inga Pratt dropped today would definitely heighten your awareness and move you towards being more healthy, making healthier decisions, being more aware, making your wellness decisions in terms of screening and prevention. And so please feel free to reach out to either of us if you need any more information. It is my absolute pleasure again sharing with you. Have a fantastic week and enjoy what's left of Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. Thank you.
We're sending it.
That definitely. Thank you so much.
Having me, Kitty.
My pleasure. Okay.
For more wonderful shows like this, please go to selfdiscoveryradio.com, podcasts, and see our lineup. And if you wish to support us, we have a funded button. Please stay tuned for our next show.